19 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're tuned into Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro. Good morning. I'm Mark Smith. Joining me by phone this morning is U.S. Senator John Bozeman. Good morning, Senator.
Hey, thanks so much for having me this morning.
Good to have you with us. Of course, you know, tonight the president gives his annual State of the Union address to a joint session of Congress and to the nation. And this promises to be a very important speech for the president, the first one of the president's second and last term, the first address to a new Congress, and an opportunity to outline his vision for the remainder of his presidency. What do you expect from this speech, and what do you hope to hear in the speech?
Well, what I hope to hear is really a path forward is as far as protecting jobs, creating more jobs in the future, and then again, trying to put our country back on a path of fiscal responsibility. Those are the things that I hear as I'm out and about in Arkansas and the emails that I'm receiving at the current time.
What do you see as the best way to put the country back on a path to fiscal responsibility?
Well, I think we have to continue to get some certainty. Right now, our business people are very concerned about regulation. The people, your listeners, are very concerned about not having a farm bill. These are things that we just simply have to get done to get some certainty for the farmers over the next 5 years. But it's not just farmers. It's physicians, providers of medical care. They're kind of up in the air as far as reimbursements. The whole Obamacare situation in itself, employers not knowing what the cost of their insurance is going to be in the future. So those are the things I think that would really help the economy a great deal.
Well, now you brought up the farm bill. I don't know how much he's going to address that in the speech tonight, but that's certainly something that needs to be done. What's the status of that right now?
Well, right now, we are reconvening. I've got the committee organized, and then I think everybody on the Ag Committee in the Senate and the House both are committed to trying to get this thing done in the next several months. So, it's just simply something that has to be done, again, to provide certainty. Our farmers, we were able to pass a clean extension, and so we have the same farm bill going forward for the next year. But it's difficult, when they go down and make their loans and things like that, the banks need to know that there's a good, solid safety net in place, depending on what might come up the next year.
Well, the president, of course, no longer has to face the pressure of a reelection bid down the road. Do you expect to see a different Obama than what you saw in the first term?
Well, I think, as far as the rhetoric, yes, I think he'll feel much more open, to really stating some of the goals that he'd like to get done, and not have, since he doesn't have to worry about re-election. So we'll have to wait and see. What we don't want is the same, let's raise taxes now and go forward with a bunch of new projects, and then at some point we'll get around to cutting spending. With a $1 trillion deficit, $16+ trillion debt, that's something that simply has to be addressed, and it's painful. It's easy to put these things off, to kick the can down the road, but at some point, very soon, we have to address the problem.
Well, the president's likely to discuss federal response to gun violence. Everybody pretty well agrees that there is a problem with gun violence in this country. Are there real solutions?
Well, I think you have to look at the whole thing. I really believe that guns are just the instrument, that they're not the cause. What does it take to create a person that really embodies evil, that would shoot their mother, multiple times, and then go in and shoot a bunch of defenseless kids? I think we need to look at the music. I think we need to look at the violent video games, the violent music, and then again, the medications that they were on. So it's a number of different things, but, the reality is 90% of the gun violence, or the violence in America, period, is committed with handguns, 5% with rifles, less than 1% with the assault-style weapons. Let's do some things that would actually make a difference.
Well, are there changes in the gun laws that you're willing to support, for instance, in background checks or something like that? What gun laws need to be better enforced?
Well, when you look at the crimes that have been committed of this nature, multiple gun laws were broken, multiple laws were broken. So I think we need to look at exactly what we're doing. We need to look at the enforcement. We need to look at the penalties, you know, behind some of our laws and make sure that we're doing a good job in that regard. Overall, it's interesting, you know, the violent crime has actually gone down in our country pretty significantly. You have pockets like Chicago that are really, you know, really hot spots that need to be dealt with. But we need to look and see what we're doing now. But what we don't need to do is a knee-jerk reaction that, you know, most people that own a gun are law-abiding, they're trying to do the right thing. We have to be very careful about taking away our freedoms in an effort to solve some of these problems.
What about tightening the background checks? That's one of the proposals that's been put forward.
No, I think I think we need to look at those things, and you know, the truth will be in the details of the laws that are proposed. The Feinstein law is very, very broad, and I'm very much opposed to that. I don't think it would make any difference. And the other thing is, we have a Second Amendment, and I believe that the Second Amendment is such that involves, you know, a personal right to have a firearm. So, you know, we need to look, but, you know, it will depend on the specific law that's proposed.
Well, the immigration reform is another issue that's back in the headlines, and it's likely to be a part of tonight's speech as well. It remains an issue with a lot of complexity and a lot of passion on both sides. It's also an issue in which Arkansas finds itself literally, geographically, in the middle. What's your vision for immigration reform?
Well, it really is important, and you know, we all agree that, like with our farmers, they need a visa program. You know, we need seasonal workers, and they need to have the ability to hire the people that they need to pick the crops on a seasonal basis. So we need a good, strong visa program for things like that. In regard to some of the other proposals, though, regardless of what we do, you have to secure the border. It doesn't matter what solution you put in place. If you don't have a good, secure border, if you don't know who's coming in here, we're a nation at war. We need to know for that reason. Tremendous drug and gun violence down on the border, besides illegal immigration. So we need to secure the border. We need to hold employers accountable, those that are gaming the system. We need to give them an easy system, though, that makes it such that they're not the immigration agent, that they can readily determine if somebody is here illegally. And I think the last thing is that, again, I'm very much opposed to amnesty. I don't think that's the right approach to take at all.
Well, House Majority Leader Eric Cantor suggested this past weekend that we start reform with the children who were brought here, didn't choose to come here, but this is the only country they've known. He feels like we should maybe start immigration reform with that populace. Is this an area where the two parties can maybe find common ground?
Well, I think we need to look at that, and certainly that's a, you know, is a real problem. I visited with young people that literally were the, you know, the head cheerleader, the person, you know, that was at the head of their class and things like that were in that situation. Mm-hmm. We have to be careful, though. What we don't want is to make it such that our public schools, you know, an influx of illegal immigrants in our public school system is the path to citizenship. So, you know, all of these things have far-reaching ramifications. We need to have a very logical discussion, and these are emotional issues, but we don't want to solve one problem and create another problem.
Well, of course, this Congress has a lot of work ahead of it. The sequester, the package of automatic budget cuts that were supposed to force the parties to work together on budget issues, the deadline passed on New Year's Eve and was moved to March 1st, I believe. And you're a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, which is having a hearing this week on the impacts of if the sequestration were to happen.
Yes, we're going to have a hearing, which is very important to understand the effect. You know, we have to reduce spending. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. This was an effort to do that. And the reality is a little over $1 trillion, $1.2 trillion in cuts are going to take place. That's a good thing. On the other hand, we need to make sure that the cuts that are going to happen are the appropriate places to cut. So we'd like to work that out. The House of Representatives has passed a couple bills that would alter, you know, those cuts and not directly affect the military as much and some other programs. Senate has refused to act. So I think at the end of the day, this is going to make the president really provide some leadership. He's going to have to, instead of just talking generalities of deals, he's going to have to put something on the table, in regard to altering the sequestration. And then once he does that, then we can negotiate in good faith and see what we can get accomplished. But we simply have to reduce spending. And so, I'm going to hold the line on the $1.2 trillion. I have differences of opinion as I don't want the current spending to go in place. It would significantly adversely affect the military. But we can make some shuffling around if we can get some agreement.
Well, this sequestration threat did not work as planned before this so-called fiscal cliff. Will it work this time?
No, I think it will, because I think it will happen. And once the cuts go into place, then everybody's going to realize that people really are very serious about demanding that we do reduce spending. And so I think the Republicans are going to allow it to go into place. And then again, we're going to have to get some ideas, working together to try and figure out the appropriate way to have the cuts and make sure that the programs that are impacted, some programs actually need the spending needs to be increased. Some need to be eliminated. Some need to be level funded. Rather, the problem with the sequestration is that it indiscriminately cuts everything. So we need to work through that. But the most important thing is we simply have to go forward with these cuts. If not, with a $1 trillion deficit the last several years, as far as the eye can see, and then over $16 trillion debt, pretty soon servicing the debt will consume all of our resources.
Do you have any specific ideas as to where cuts need to happen in the budget?
Well, as I said, the House has actually passed two bills, sent them over to the Senate, and, they're just kind of laying there waiting for action. So we need both sides to put the stuff out on the table and then negotiate in good faith.
What are the ideas? I know we always talk about getting rid of waste, fraud, and abuse in some of the social programs. Are there specific ideas to deal with those issues?
Well, I think that is a good example. We need to do that. And to be honest, most programs, I know that everything from the budget that's given our congressional offices, that needs to be cut. It was last year. It can be cut a little bit more. We always send money back to the Treasury. So we need to look at those things. Those are little things, but they mount up. So I think every program, there's a few exceptions, as I said earlier, that actually need to be increased. But defense is going to take a cut, not the draconian cut that's scheduled, but it will take a cut. I think every program is looking at scaling back. We simply can't continue to spend at the rate that we are.
Well, you said a couple of times now that there are some programs that need to be increased. Can you say what those are?
Well, I guess the principle is that you don't take a meat cleaver to everything. There's actually some programs that actually make the government money. For instance, we have a large timber industry in Arkansas, and you have to provide the money for the national park system to get the people that organize the sale of timber. Timber is a natural resource, and I'm not talking about clear cutting or anything like that. This is something that goes on all the time as we manage our forest. Mm-hmm. But you have to have those people in place to make the sales, and then you ultimately, those sales, the government gets a percent profits from the sale, and the government actually makes money in doing that. So there's a number of things like that, that we just need to be careful about making sure that we're supporting that actually, again, bring revenue into the government. And there's other social programs, this and that, that again need to be strengthened. I think the hospice program that allows people to, you know, stay in their homes as they have very, very serious illnesses that are going to result in their passing away, the ability to stay and not access the system of, you know, being in a hospital room, you know, using those resources when the family would like to have them at home. I know with my mother and father and grandmother and things, that was a tremendous resource. Those are things that we need to support, and those are things that don't need to be cut.
Now, your first bill introduced in this Congress deals with helping veterans further their education. Tell us a little bit about this proposal.
Well, our first bill, you know, in the last Congress was a veterans bill, and this time we're opening up the same way. I've been on the Veterans Affairs Committee as a congressman and now as a senator. What we'd like to do, it's very difficult. The service people travel so much, their residencies really get messed up at times. And so as all this does is say that if you get, if you're part of the GI Bill, and we have a very generous GI Bill that we've transformed in the last several years, but if you're receiving money from the GI Bill as an institution for a student, that you should give them in-state tuition. And I don't, you know, this is not going to amount to a lot of money for the states. In fact, I think that states will actually attract students as a result of it being easier for the, you know, for the veteran or for the person that's currently in the military. It's just an effort to open up some avenues for our guys, men and women that are serving, and our veterans to help with unemployment, further their education, and we're working with some others to try and get that done.
Do you see this bill moving forward fairly quickly, or is there going to be opposition to it? Or
you know, you never know. I don't think so. On the House, the sponsors are the chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee, Jeff Miller, and then his ranking member, both good friends, a guy named Congressman Michaud from Maine. And so you have tremendous support in the House, and I think that we'll have very, very good support in the Senate. And if there are some differences that we need to work out, if there's some concerns, hopefully we can get that done. But, I think that we've got a good chance of getting this passed.
Okay, a couple of minutes left. The world is, of course, keeping a close eye now on North Korea as that country has conducted yet another test of a nuclear weapon. How seriously is this being viewed by the U.S.?
Well, I think very seriously. You know, North Korea is an unbelievably poor country. I was actually on the DMZ a few weeks ago in South Korea, visiting with the commander of our forces in that area, and you can look across the DMZ, and you immediately know that it's North Korea, because literally, and this is not an exaggeration, the foliage on the trees themselves, the bark's being stripped, because they're at the point of actually boiling the stuff and eating it, because they simply don't have anything. The only way that the North Koreans seem to be able to draw attention is by rattling the saber, you know, and threatening their nuclear capability, trying to buy off the rest of the world. It's a very serious situation, you know, when you have people that are so impoverished like that. And so everybody's really watching it very closely.
It's an interesting development there. I mean, you've got these people that are so desperately poor, and yet this country is trying to make itself into a nuclear power.
It's unbelievable. You know, that the height of the average population is about 4 inches shorter because of the malnutrition. The other thing you have to worry about is, them taking this technology and selling it to rogue entities throughout the world.
Yeah. Senator John Bozeman joining us from his office in Washington this morning. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.